have to do a little tshuva this morning because we advertised a topic for the shiur. When I was preparing over the weekend, I realized that I didn't have enough material. So late last night, I decided to put that one on hold and switch topics. And I hope to get to that before Yom Kippur, so I'll turn around and anybody who wants to walk out can leave. I apologize, but hopefully we'll speak about Kol Nidre, we'll speak about the halachos of Yom Kippur and Mitzvah Shem in a couple of weeks. But I did want to speak about something which is relevant to Rosh Hashanah, and it's an interesting topic in general. It's nageya to a number of mitzvahs. And that is the question of, is a person allowed to eat before doing a mitzvah that the Torah prescribes for a certain day? Like, for example, on Rosh Hashanah, so the mitzvah of Rosh Hashanah really is to the Tekiah Shofar. The Torah says, Yom Teruah Yeh Lachem, that's the mitzvah. So a lot of, in almost every shul, the davening on Rosh Hashanah is very lengthy, and the question comes up, that perhaps there should be some sort of break, maybe before Musaf, in order to enable people to maybe eat something so that they would have the strength to daven properly and be able to hang in there for the long davening. So this is a question which is a little sensitive because of the fact that in general, shuls are opposed to the idea of people making Kiddush before davening Musaf on a regular Shabbos. Obviously, it's a lot different on Rosh Hashanah because the Musaf on Rosh Hashanah is a very lengthy tefillah that takes several hours between the silent Shemone Esrei and the repetition of the Shemone Esrei. On a regular Shabbos, it just takes a few minutes. We've discussed this in the past. I don't want to go back to that topic. But the fact of the matter is that there is a significant halachic issue here that's involved. So we'll start, actually, if you take a look at the sheet here, the Mishnah tells us in Maseches Sukkah, there are two places in the Chazal where this comes up. It's interesting that it is not discussed in the laws of Rosh Hashanah. I'm not sure why, maybe because it was assumed that you would know it from other places. Okay, but the Mishnah in Maseches Sukkah in the Daf Lamed Ches says as follows. The Mishnah says, this is on side number one by the Mishnah, which is about six lines from the top. It says, Misha Babaderech, a person who comes from the road, Velohaya Biyada Lulav Lito, okay, and he did not have a lulav. He did not have a lulav to shake. So, Likashikanes Lubeso, Ito Al Shulchano. So, literally means that when he comes into his house, he should take it from his table. What does that mean? So the way it's explained in the Gemara means that, let's say a person doesn't have a lulav, and he figures out, what am I going to do? You don't have a lulav, you don't have a lulav. So life goes on. So he starts to eat. Right? He davens without a lulav, and he starts to eat. And then he gets a lulav in the middle of the meal. So the halacha is, yitol al shulchano, that he's supposed to interrupt his meal and shake the lulav. He's not supposed to, he cannot finish the meal. He's supposed to interrupt the meal and take the lulav. And from this, the poskim derive, in the way the Gemara explains it, that certainly the case would be that if he had the lulav ahead of time, that he would not be allowed to eat before he shook the lulav. In other words, we know that in general there's a question, is a person allowed to eat before davening? So that is a different issue. The eating before davening is the question of the fact that the first thing a person wakes up in the morning is supposed to daven to Hashem, and he should do that from a position of humility. A person eats a good meal, eat a good breakfast, and then you're going to come to daven to Hashem. So the humility, the sense of humbleness may not be there because of the fact that I just had a very good meal. I'm feeling very good about things. A person has to have a certain achnah, a certain humility. So that's true in general about eating before davening. But here we're talking about a different question. The person davened already. He davened already, but now there's a mitzvah to do it, right? The shaking of the lulav, the blowing of the shofar, the reading of the Megillah on Purim, all of these things take place after we've davened. Right, we do it first. You daven shachris. That's the first matter of business, and then we get to the mitzvah. So now the question is: can you eat before doing the mitzvah, or do we say no? You have to wait. So apparently, the halach is here, the Mishnah tells us in Masechet Sukkah that, yeah, a person has to wait. In other words, we're saying here that even had he started to eat, he would have to interrupt his meal. So certainly, he cannot eat before doing the mitzvah. So it says over here. Now, why not? So if you turn over the page, there's a similar idea that we find in the Mishnayos, in Masechet Shabbos. Now here, this Mishnah is not talking about Shabbos, even though it's in the Masechet Shabbos, but it's talking about the laws of davening mincha. So the Mishnah here says, Lo yeshev adam lefnei ha-sapar samach l'mincha ad sheyisvalo, that a person should not go in to get a haircut when it's time for mincha until he has davened. Okay, v'lo yikaneis adam l'merchatz, nor should he go into a bathhouse, v'lo l'borsaki, not to a tannery, v'lo lecho, shouldn't sit down to eat, that's the part that's relevant to us, v'lo l'din, nor to be involved in any sort of litigation, to be a dayan on a din Torah, and so forth. Why not? So the Gemara explains the reason for this is because of the concern that in anything that takes time, it's possible that a person will get caught up in it and will end up not doing it. Okay, in other words, that's the concern. Something which is a momentary thing, so it's not a big deal, and not, there's no real concern that if I do this before I do the mitzvah, I'm going to forget to do the mitzvah. But something which is more of a time-consuming type of activity, so then there's a concern that you may not end up doing it. You may forget to do the mitzvah altogether. So this is a din in general. It's interesting to note that, you know, this is true about davening on the regular tefillahs. Now, you know, it's interesting because when it comes to davening, so very often, so we have, let's say, this time of the year. So mincha in the shuls is probably this week about 7:10, I would imagine, something like that, right? So a lot of people eat supper before that. So how are you allowed to do that? It says here you're not supposed to eat before you daven mincha. So the answer is that it's brought in the poskim that if a person has a minyan kavua, if a person has a set minyan that he goes to, so then he doesn't have to worry because he has the habit of going to that minyan, and it's sort of like a reminder to him. He goes every day, and that's when they daven. So that's when they daven. That's when they daven with a minyan. Before that, he wouldn't be able to daven with a minyan. So then it's okay. So then it's all right. But it's interesting to note that if a person, for whatever reason, is not going to shul, if a person, I'm in a place where I went away on business, I'm in a hotel, and there is no shul. So now the question is, I want to eat supper and I have to have ma'ariv. So the halacha is that a person should always daven first. A person is always supposed to daven first. To say, oh, I'll daven ma'ariv later, which is the natural tendency that, you just push it off. Okay, before I go to sleep, whatever, I'll daven ma'ariv. That's not correct. The person is really supposed to daven first. As soon as the time for ma'ariv comes, as soon as the time for mincha comes, the person's supposed to daven. It happens to be that if for whatever reason, you know, if there's a minyan, so for a minyan, a person can wait. Then the halacha is, if I'm waiting for the minyan, so for whatever reason it is, that's then already, that they first daven at 10 o'clock at night or whatever, so that the person can wait for. But if a person knows he's not going to shul, he should daven ma'ariv before he eats supper, daven mincha before he eats supper, because that's really the halacha, that you're not supposed to get involved in any of these activities because of the fact that you may get caught up and forget. Now, even though it's, you know, to us, you would say, well, that's very strange. Come on, it's one thing with mincha, but it's another thing. A guy's going to forget to shake a lulav on sukkahs. A guy's going to forget to blow the shofar, hear the tekiah shofar. But nevertheless, once a rule is set into place, when the Rabbanon put policies into effect, so it becomes, that's the policy for everything. That's the policy for everything. So that being the case, so the question comes up, by a number of mitzvahs, is a person allowed to actually eat before doing the mitzvah? In other words, by davening, it's a different issue. So therefore, on Shabbos, if for a person, after he davened Shachris, theoretically, wanted to make Kiddush, so then, putting aside all the concerns that the shuls have, but there is no more mitzvah to do. In other words, there's no specific mitzvah at that point. But when it comes Rosh Hashanah, or when it comes Sukkot, or when it comes even by the Megillas Esther, see, this comes up also, that the Megillas Esther is a mitzvah, is when it comes Purim, so we know that the reading of the Megillas Esther is twice. It's by night and by day. Now, by night, in most years, it's following a fast day. Right? Now, sometimes it's Motzei Shabbos, but most years it's not like that. So it's following a fast day. So now, let's say a person says, you know, this has been quite a fast, and especially now that often they change the clock before Purim, just like, what is this past year like that, that they change, it's a warm fast, the Tanya says that. And then you have to go in the Megillah, which takes time also. And you, especially at night of Purim, and all the kids are in shul, and all the noise and everything, it takes a very long time. So a person says, you know what, I had enough, I'll end the fast, and we'll push off the reading of the Megillah, and we'll eat first. Right? Now, no one has ever seen a shul do that. That's an amazing thing. Right? How come you've never seen? Why don't we have that? That they should have Ma'ariv, and then there should be a 15-minute break. Right? In that 15-minute break, they'll put out juice and cake. Everybody will break the fast. And then you'll sit down and hear the Megillah's Esther like a mensch. You know, I feel good. I'm not stressed out. So why is that not done? Right, good question. So that's not done because of this. That's not done because of the fact that you're not supposed to eat before you do a mitzvah. And when there's a mitzvah to do, there was the concern that a person will get caught up in it and will forget to do it. Yeah, yes.
You just said that if you have a minyan that's kavua, so therefore that munch usually would be okay.
So that
knows that that's a set time.
Yeah, okay, that's a good question. Why they don't rely on that, I'm not sure. I don't know. But apparently, I don't know if that works for mitzvahs, it could be only works for tefillahs. I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know the answer to that. Yeah, yes, go.
Why
don't
we just use the rule,
Ein Mavir Na'al Mitzvahs? How would that apply here?
Because he's in the middle of eating, which is not necessarily, you mean Kiddush, which wasn't mitzvah, but now he's eating.
Right.
And the mitzvah of the lulav is in front of him.
Right.
Yeah,
well, I'm saying Ein Mavir Na'al Mitzvahs usually means that if there's a mitzvah in front of you, you shouldn't. In other words, if you shouldn't pass up this mitzvah to do a different mitzvah or something like that. In other words, you're right. If there's a mitzvah to do, you're supposed to do it. But I haven't done it yet. In other words, I'm not passing it over. I'm going to get to it. In other words, I don't think there is an idea as reason makdimah la mitzvah. You're supposed to do a mitzvah as early in the day as possible. But I don't think we apply the rule of Ein Mavir Na'al Mitzvahs for that type of thing. In other words, we don't say I shouldn't pass it over. Okay, it hasn't come to me yet. When it comes to me, I'll do it. So anyway, so this is the question. So it happens to be that if you turn over the page to back to side one, okay. So in the laws of the reading of the Megillah, so it says the following in Sif Dawud, the Shulchan Aruch says. Mishahu onus ktsas, a person who is in a little bit of a difficult situation, ve'enu yochel leilucho beis haknesses, and he can't go to shul to hear the Megillah on Purim. He can't make it. So he has to hear the Megillah, so what's he going to do? So he's going to have to wait till it's over, and then someone will come read the Megillah for him. Tzarech la'amtin ad achar shekaru akol, and he's going to have to wait till later. V'kosha olav leishev betainis kolkach, and it's hard for him. It's going to be, you know, first I have to wait for them to read the Megillah, and then I have to wait for somebody to come and read the Megillah for me. So it's going to take, who knows when. I won't be finished till 10 o'clock at night. That's an inordinate amount of time to fast. So says the Shulchan Aruch, so what should he do in that situation? Yochol l'shmoa kriyosa mibod yom miplaga mincho l'mala. That actually, see, we would have thought, so what would you say the solution would be? Solution would be, so let him eat. Right, yeah, and there's, you have a lot of times, women who have young children don't go to shul on Purim to hear the Megillah, which is really the right thing because the kids won't behave. Right, they're too young, so they're going to just disturb, so they stay home. But they have to hear the Megillah, so they have a women's reading of the Megillah later at night. But it's a fast day, so what do you do about eating? So everybody would assume, we'll see in a minute. Everybody would assume, all right, so let them eat is fine. Okay, but here the Shulchan Aruch is talking about a person who's in a similar type of situation. Right, in other words, he can't have the Megillah till afterwards, and he's going to be very hungry. So what should he do? So the Shulchan Aruch says not that he should eat. Shulchan Aruch says let him read the Megillah, let him hear the Megillah before everybody else. He could hear the Megillah already from Plag HaMincha. He could hear the Megillah read on when it's still Tainus Esther by everybody else, but once it's Plag HaMincha, the last hour and a quarter before the Shkia, he could go ahead and have someone read the Megillah for him at that time, and he could be Yotzei, because b'dieved you could be Yotzei mitzvahs that are at night already from the Plag HaMincha.
So right? That's what Shulchan. Right?
What's that?
They had the Daven Mara first.
It doesn't say that. It could be. It could be. I don't know if you dafka after Daven Mara first. Maybe not. But that's what he says. That's what you should do. That's true, but he doesn't say, it's just interesting, he doesn't say, so eat, no problem, you know, I'll tell you, no problem. Okay, comes along the Ramah, and the Ramah really hits this point home, and he says, Hagah, avo osa lechel, called him Shishma Kriyas HaMegillah, but a person cannot eat before he hears the Megillah, afilu hatainis kosholav, even if it's going to be a difficult thing for him. He cannot hear before the Megillah. Cannot eat before the Megillah. Okay, so that sounds very, very tough. Very tough. Now, it's very harsh. Now, you'll say, well, it's not just harsh, but I've never heard this in my life. So why have you not heard this in your life? Because not everybody agrees with this. Because the fact of the matter is that if you look in the Mishnah Berurah, but it's interesting to see how they disagree. In the Mishnah Berurah, it brings down, in the bottom here, Yud Dalit, okay, that's in the column of the Mishnah Berurah, so on the right-hand side, it's three lines before the lines get wide. He says, Avo Oser Lecho, he says, Ein B'mogen Avram Shem Masik, D'dafka Achila Oser. So comes the Mogen Avram, and he says that the only thing that is really prohibited is to eat a meal. Avo Te'ima Ba'al Mashari. But to just taste a little something, that's okay. For Al Kain Tov Yoser Lahoka Laish Hazeh Sheyitom called him Kriyas HaMegillah. So says the Magen Avraham. So therefore, he says, in my opinion, says the Magen Avraham, it would be better to tell this person, if it's hard for him, to eat a little something before the Megillah rather than to be lenient and hear the Megillah read when it's still daytime from Plag HaMincha. In other words, the Shulchan Aruch said you should hear the Megillah read from Plag HaMincha. So the Magen Avraham says, well, that's relying on a very big leniency. So he said, I don't think you have to rely on such a leniency, because when the prohibition was made, you're not allowed to eat. They meant you're not allowed to eat a meal. But to just have a te'ima means a taste, which we'll have to see what that is. So that, he says, is okay. Okay, so then he quotes other people that agree with this. Okay, but if you go down two lines, the second wide line, we'll skip a couple of lines, to the second wide line, he says, va'afilu te'ima Ein lahakel elo litzarech gadol, says the Mishnah Berurah, quoting based on this Magen Avraham. He says that, okay, so we have a ruling now that's a little less harsh, that you don't have to wait, you don't have to torture yourself to fast until who knows when, and you shouldn't take the leniency of hearing the Megillah early, but rather you can have a little something. Says the Mishnah Berurah that a person should not be lenient on this point, elo litzarech gadol, only for a great need. What's a great need? Dehainu cholek tzas, either the person is a bit ill, o misha misanev ha'tainus koshalo, or a person who's fasting and it's very hard. It's very hard for him to fast. He feels fainting. I just can't. So then you could be lenient. Okay. So this is good to know when it comes to Purim. This happens sometimes. Especially with women happens, and we have to bear in mind that when it comes to the hearing the Megillah, a woman has more of an obligation to hear the Megillah on Purim than to hear the Shofar on Rosh Hashanah, right? Because of the fact that both of them are time-oriented mitzvahs, and time-oriented mitzvahs Eish HaZman Grama, so women are generally absolved from, but there are certain exceptions. Right, so the rabbinic mitzvahs, so women are not exempted in a situation where we say af hein hayu ba'osa hanes, that they were also involved in the miracle, they were also beneficiaries in the miracle. So therefore, the decree of Purim, Haman's decree, was both on men and on women. So therefore, when the mitzvah was set up, when the Rabbanan made the mitzvah to hear the Megillah on Purim, so they made it that it's both men and women, there's no difference. So even though ordinarily, by the rules of the Torah, a woman should not have to hear the Megillah, right, because it's time-oriented, but this is an exception, right? The same thing is true with the Hanukkah candles. that women have an obligation in Chanukah candles just like men, because of the fact that also afhein hayu ba'osa hanes. Whereas when it comes to the Tekiah Shofar, Tekiah Shofar is a mitzvah daraisa, so it's governed by different rules. Afhein hayu ba'osa hanes doesn't play any role in that, and anyway, it wouldn't be applicable. So, but when it comes to that, really, women don't have to hear the Shofar. Right, the custom has been, especially here in America, for many, many decades, the custom has been that women do everything in their power to come to shul to hear the Tekiah Shofar and so forth, and rightfully so, but at the end of the day, it's not the same level of obligation. But it happens to be that when it comes to, so when it comes Purim, and a woman has young children and she can't go to shul, she can't go to shul. So she has to wait till the women's reading in Megillah, 9:30, 10 o'clock, right, it's very hard because the men come home from shul and then the men want to eat because they've been fasting. So the wife has to serve the husband and then she first has to go hear the Megillah. So what are you going to do? You're going to fast till then. So the truth of the matter is, so a lot of people are lenient in this because of the fact that it's so hard. So you eat a little something. The best thing would be if a woman could, if she doesn't have young children, if she go hear the Megillah together with the men. But if not, so this is what is commonly done. That people will eat a little something because that already that's included in the category of hatainus kasha love that it's difficult for me to fast. Okay, now what does this have to do with Rosh Hashanah? So it has to do with as follows: because when it comes to Tekiah Shofar, so the blowing of the shofar in Rosh Hashanah is a mitzvah, right? It's a mitzvah d'oraisa, it's a mitzvah from the Torah. So now the prohibition of eating before then should be enforced. Should be enforced. You'll say, all right, but in yeshivas, yeshivas are notorious for this, that yeshivas have a break for Kiddush after they finish the Kriyas HaTorah, right? They daven Shacharis, and then they read from the Torah, and then after the Haftarah, we have break for Kiddush till this and this time. And in some shuls, it's also like that, that they have a break for Kiddush. So the question is, how exactly is that a permissible? Right? In other words, so you'll say, well, we have a precedent here by the Megillah. Yeah, but what did it say? The Mishnah Berurah didn't say a blanket heter. The Mishnah Berurah said that this applies to a person who either is sick or a person who the hatayin is kosher alav, but it's not a fast day. So right now, nobody's suffering. So you'll say, well, if I stay till the end of Musaf, so then I will be suffering, so maybe they should have a little faster. In other words, who says that this is applicable in this situation? So it happens to be that this has been a matter of great debate over the years, and it has long been instituted in yeshivas that it's done this way. There is a famous story that, the Lakewood Yeshiva, so Rav Aaron Kudler, when he organized the Lakewood Yeshiva, so he put this into practice, that they made Kiddush before the Kriyas HaTorah. At that time, the person who was considered to be the Posek Hador in America was a man by the name of Yosef Eliel Henkin, Zatzal, and he was adamantly opposed to this practice, and he held that there was absolutely no heter to do such a thing. So, but he didn't want to start up with Rav Aaron Kudler because he wasn't the type of person that he started up with. But after Rav Aaron Kudler passed away, so they say the story that he called Rav Aaron Kudler, was succeeded by his son, Rav Schneer Kudler, Zatzal, who became the Rosh Hashiva. He was younger than Rav Henkin, so they say over the story that Rav Henkin called him up and said, it's one thing that they did this when your father was alive. He said, but now you're in charge, and I am gozer on you, meaning that I am not suggesting. I am telling you that you must listen to me, that you have to ban this practice. You have to stop it. No good. It's wrong. It has to be stopped. So he didn't know what to do. He was older than him. And also he was accepted at that time, even in a certain sense, even more so than Rav Moshe Feinstein, he was accepted as the Posek Hador, that he was the person that everybody turned to with their shilas. So he didn't know what to do, so he consulted with Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, who was already older, and he said that if this was your father's policy, then you should keep it. This is the thing, you should keep the practice, you should keep the customs. And this is what your father instituted, that's what you should do also. But this is how far it goes. In other words, the degree of controversy that's involved in this is significant. So now, in other words, if a person is sick, Okay, so that already have a heter. That even though we should be pointed out that not everybody agrees with that either. In other words, the Shulchan Aruch didn't say this. The Ramah didn't say this. Right? The Shulchan Aruch said that when it comes to the Kriyas HaMegillah, the best thing is let him hear the Megillah read in the daytime. Right? Why didn't they, now you talk about a person who's having a hard time fasting, so why didn't they say, all right, so he'll hear it later and let him eat something? So apparently the Mechaber Shulchan Aruch doesn't agree. So the Magen Avraham came along with a leniency. So not everybody's in agreement, but even the Magen Avraham's leniency only applies when it comes to a person who's not feeling well. But a person who's feeling fine and just wants to go have something so that he'll be able to daven with more kavana, who says that's permissible? So this is, as I say, a matter of debate. So in the Sefer Mata Ephraim, which we quoted last week, Mata Ephraim is a Sefer which goes into great detail on the laws of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. So he brings down that apparently there was a custom in Europe that they would allow people on Rosh Hashanah to go and have a cup of coffee or a cup of tea before the Tekiah Shofar without making Kiddush. Without making Kiddush. Now we know that the halacha is on Shabbos and on Yontif that when you wake up in the morning, if you want to have, a cup of coffee before you go to shul, you don't have to make Kiddush. Right? Why not? Because the obligation to make Kiddush first comes about after you daven. Shachris. Once you daven Shachris, according to most poskim, once you daven Shachris, there's already a chiv to make Kiddush. So therefore, a person wants to have a cup of coffee, you can just drink it, no problem. But after you daven Shachris, then even if you want to have a glass of water, you have to make Kiddush first. Right? Because at that point, there's an obligation to make Kiddush. Okay, so to say that a person could just have a cup of tea or a cup of coffee without making Kiddush is a Kiddush to say. But apparently this was a practice that a custom that they put into practice in Europe, apparently because they didn't want people making Kiddush, because you're making Kiddush on an alcoholic beverage, so then you're going to go hear the Tekiah Shofar, who's not such a good thing. So therefore, this he brings down that this was something that people did, that they would allow this, that they would have a tea or coffee, or even water, whatever it is, they would allow that. But that's as far as it went. So the Mata Ephraim is not on the sheet, but the Mata Ephraim says that if a person is weak and he knows that he's not going to be able to handle the Tekiah Shofar because he's just feeling weak, he's been davening already, he got up earlier, it's Rosh Hashanah, and he's been davening already for several hours, so he says, Yasa Kiddush V'Yochol Kazayis Lekach, that he should make Kiddush and eat a little cake in order to be B'makom Suda. And then he says, Mikol Makom Yesh Lohem Lasos B'Tzinah, that this should not be done in public. This should not be done in public because of the fact that if you do it in public, people get carried away, and before you know it, they'll have a hot Kiddush with all kinds of things, and that's not right. That's for sure not right. Everybody agrees. That's not right. So therefore, the Mata Ephraim says that this should be done privately. Okay, so the fact of the matter is that in a lot of shuls and a lot of yeshivas, it's done publicly. It's done publicly. So, okay, there are three schools of thought. The most extreme is that you can't do it under any circumstances. Then you have people who say that if a person not feeling well, that they could do it, which seems to be the Mishnah Berurah's opinion. And then you have the most lenient opinion, which has become accepted in a lot of places, that it's just institutionalized that they make Kiddush before the Tekiah Shofar. Okay, yes.
You can apply the same svar again from Megillah. If you go back and you do it in a public setting,
right,
you should be able to break your fast right before Megillah reading.
Because you're not going to forget.
Because you're not going to forget, just like they're saying over here.
Yes.
Make it publicly over
so
here.
I don't know. That's a very good question. I don't know why they don't say that. But the people don't say it. In other words, it could be that when you're dealing with such a thing, maybe everyone's, in other words, they're all in the same boat. Everyone's going
to
forget.
So
Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, in his Sefer, Alicha Shlomo, made the point. He said, if we're so machmir by the Megillah, he said, they're so machmir, so strict by the Megillah, which is the Rabbana number one, and number two is coming off a fast. Everyone's starved. They're coming off a fast, and still we're not lenient. So he says, how can you be lenient with the Tekiah Shofar? What's the issue? Tekiah Shofar is in the morning, nobody's fasting, and it's a mitzvah d'oraisa. So how can you be lenient in such a thing? That's what he said. But nevertheless, like I say, the prevailing custom in a lot of places is to do it. Yes?
Fasting is part of Purim.
Fasting, not part of Purim.
It is.
You mean to Zecher, to the Nes, to the Esther's fast? Yeah, all right. But I'm saying, but in terms of the tsar that the person is having, in other words, that's really what's the issue here. In other words, the person is tsar. I'm suffering. It's hard for me to do this. I have to sit through the Megillah. I'm starving.
Right.
So that's the realities of life. So anyway, like I said, yes.
So the theory of the yeshivas is that they have to make kiddush before matzos.
So why do the yeshivas do it? So the yeshivas do it. One thing is that. To make kiddush before chatzos, but the fact of the matter is that's not such a great heter, really, because the post can bring down that even though you're not supposed to fast on yontif even half the day, but if a person is immersed in davening or immersed in learning, then that rule doesn't apply. So therefore, it's not the biggest deal if a person didn't make kiddush. It's not the biggest deal. But yeah, that's part of it. But I think the main reason why they do it is because they just feel that in order a person should be able to daven with kavanah, Rosh Hashanah, a very important day. So therefore, you want to be able to daven properly. So if a person is hungry and strung out, he's not going to be able to daven well. So because of that, people are lenient and they make kiddush. Okay? So I'm not saying that's accepted. If we do it here, it's accepted. Now, the question comes, what exactly are you allowed to eat at this kiddush? In other words, do we say, all right, so I make kiddush, so great, I can do what I want. So if you look here on the, actually on page one, so back to the Mishnah Berurah that we had been reading, so he says that the last four lines on the page, the end of the line, v'shir te'ima hainu kebeya pas o mashkin kishir beya. He says that it would be the amount of bread the size of an egg. Okay, now how much is the size of an egg? What eggs do we go by? So basically in the contemporary, from what I saw, the contemporary shiurim, it's anywhere between 2 and 3.5 ounces. Okay, now, that applies to bread, but it also applies to cake. Because cake is considered quasi-bread in this regard. So therefore, if a person were to say, all right, so I'm eating before Tekiah Shofar, so he brings a little feast, right? He comes a couple of danishes and honey cake. After all, it's Rosh Hashanah, come with honey cake and all different types of honey cake, and I'll sit down and have a little this, a little that, and people pass around. Everyone can taste everyone else's recipe. So that's not really the right thing, even if you're going to be lenient. In other words, even if you're going to be lenient and do that, that a person should not do. What's interesting is that when it comes to fruit or anything that's non-cake, there is no shir. The halacha is that when it comes to that, no matter how much you eat is not considered a kfiyus. So therefore, a person could have 5 oranges, and that would be fine. Or a person could have several bowls of cereal, and that would be fine. But to eat cake... Yeah, it depends, I guess, what type of cereal. You know, if you had Mizonos, cake type things in it. But you know, regular, let's say, Rice Krispies, right? So a person with cornflakes. A person, that there is no shir. But you'll never see, you almost never see at a kiddush a person eating that, right? What you will see is people eating cake, right? Why? You're going to sit down and have Rice Krispies or Rosh Hashanah. Yeah, what kind of thing is that? Maybe it's a bad omen, you know, you're having But the fact of the matter is...
You can have honeycomb.
Honeycomb, there you go. Right, okay. So kugel is also good. Right, so that's the irony. See, a lot of times, halacha takes on a life of its own. So therefore, once the policy was made, see, in the olden days, it wasn't this way, because generally speaking, the staple of all meals was bread, like we've said many times, right? The reason why when you eat bread, you say the bracha hamotzi and no other bracha, right? Yesterday on Shabbos, everybody said hamotzi, and then there were several courses that followed, and no brachas were said. Why not? Because of the fact that in the olden times, until not that long ago, people didn't have so much meat. People didn't have so much chicken. So therefore, whatever you had, you ate. You wouldn't be full if you just ate that. Even today, you wouldn't be full if you just ate that. So you have to eat with some carbs. You have to have something to fill yourself up. So people would eat it together with bread. So since they ate it together with bread, it was considered secondary to bread. And therefore, you only say the halacha is that when you have a primary food and a secondary food that are eaten together, you only make a bracha on the primary food, right? If you have a piece of cake with whipped cream on it, so you don't say shahako on the whipped cream, because the primary food is the cake. So that's all. So you say the bracha on that. So it used to be that this was the same when a person made kiddush also. So it wasn't like everybody had lots and lots of fruit. Today, the world is different. Today, we have refrigeration. It changed so many things. So therefore, today you can have kugel and you can have cereal and you have all these processed foods which didn't exist in the olden times. So therefore, the halacha, when it was established, was that the primary consideration is bread and cake. So the irony is that when it comes to Kiddush in a shul or in a yeshiva which has Kiddush on Rosh Hashanah, a person should not indulge in a lot of cake. There's a shir. The shir is a kebeif. Beyond that, there is no heter according to all opinions. There is no heter. Unless a person is sick, a person lying in bed, I need more, okay, fine. But other than that, there is no heter. So it's just important to know this. I don't think this is so well known. You see, a lot of times, you know, people are very medactic. They want to make sure they have Kiddush B'Makom Suda. Okay, that's a consideration. You have to have at least the kezayis in order to be Kiddush B'Makom Suda. But, you know, then in their zealousness to keep this halacha, they you know, keep, you know, a few more donuts, a few more danishes, whatever it may be. So that already is not right, even on Rosh Hashanah. Yeah, yes?
Is there any issue when Rosh Hashanah falls on Shabbos?
Okay, so when Rosh Hashanah falls on Shabbos, thank you for bringing that up. When Rosh Hashanah falls on Shabbos, this is different. The reason why it's different is because there is no Tekiah Shofar on Shabbos. So if there is no Tekiah Shofar on Shabbos, and the only issue is that you're going to daven Musaf, so that already pretty much everybody would allow. So like last year, I believe it was that way, that Rosh Hashanah was Shabbos and Sunday. I don't remember, maybe not, whatever. But it happens every couple of years that it's Shabbos and Sunday, right? So the first day of Shabbos is no Tekiah Shofar. If there's no Tekiah Shofar, there is no mitzvah. So if there is no mitzvah, and you want to make Kiddush because you know that it's going to be a long musaf and it's going to be several hours till you get home and you want to daven with kavana, so there would be less of an objection. But the objection comes about, this year we hit the jackpot because Rosh Hashanah is the middle of the week, so therefore you have the shofar, 2 days of Tekiah Shofar, so both days you have the mitzvah. Both days you have the mitzvah, so a person has to keep this in mind. Okay, now, when it comes to women, so what about the din by women? So women could be more lenient here, because like we said before, a woman meikra din doesn't have to hit a tekiah shofar, right? So even though the common practice is that women do come, and they come, you know, really with a strong minhag to come to, that women should come here, the shofar Rosh Hashanah, but because of the fact that technically the law doesn't apply to them, so there is more room for a woman to be lenient in this. But a man, a child also would be that way, but a man who has the chiyuv min haTorah, so not just from the minhag like the women do, as a real chiyuv min haTorah, so then a person would have to be a little bit stricter with this. Now, there are two other issues in halacha that come up when this kiddush takes place that people are not so familiar with. Yeah, guys.
Let's say somebody is not going to get to kiyuv until much later.
Right.
Somebody's in the hospital.
Right.
And somebody's not going to show up until 4 o'clock. In the
right,
afternoon.
Right.
So this still, he has no heter to have a
suda,
nothing. He has
no. So if the person is in the hospital, again, if the person is in the hospital, so then you know he really does not. It's a different set of rules because probably any person who's hospitalized can't play games. So you know you have to eat. You have to eat normally. He already has compromised health. He has to eat. But let's say you're staying with somebody who's in the hospital. Right, so you're a healthy person. You happen to be that you're doing the great mitzvah of Gmilus Chasadim on Rosh Hashanah. That you're staying with somebody who's going to yeah. So this is a question. So I think it's discussed here in the just a minute. The I think it's discussed in the Mishnah Berurah by the Hilchos Lulav. Let's see here. Just bear with me for a minute. Yeah, I don't know. It could be they shouldn't have a suit until that time. It could be. It could be you have to wait. You could obviously eat. The person who's sick, there's no question. The person who's sick shouldn't. None of these halachas apply. You do what you need to do to get healthy, and that's it. But when it comes to a person who's accompanying them, maybe yeah, it could be. It's true that they would have to wait. Okay, now two halachas that come up when it comes to this kiddush, and one of them. A lot of places are not careful about it. And that is, when do they break for Kiddush? So they break for Kiddush right after the Haftarah. Right after the Haftarah. Now, that is before the Sifrei Torah had been put back in the Aron. Okay, in other words, because the way it is that after, you know, after the Haftarah, you blow the shofar, and then first, that's special, it's brought in halacha, that the Sifrei Torah is supposed to be there when you blow the shofar. You blow the shofar in the place where the Sifrei Torah are. So if you're going out for Kiddush, you're leaving the Sifrei Torah on the table. Now, is there any issue with that? So there is an issue with that. There's halacha that's not known to people at all. But in the laws of Kriya Sefer Torah, it's not on the sheet, but you'll trust me on this. The Shulchan Aruch says in Simen Kuf Mem Tes that you're not allowed to leave a shul until the Sifrei Torah have been put away. Meaning that the Sifrei Torah have been put back in the Aron. Okay, because it's considered disrespectful. The Sefer Torah is being left around and you're leaving. You know, we give great honor to the Sefer Torah. Okay, so then you have to make sure. You're not even, by the way, this halacha, which is really not well known, is you're not supposed to leave shul even if they're going to put away the Sefer Torah, but you're leaving davening early. In other words, let's say it's tomorrow morning, Monday morning, they read the Torah and you have to get to work. So you say to yourself, okay, right after Kriya Sefer Torah, I'm going to leave. Right, I'll finish up the davening on my own, but right after Kriya Sefer Torah, I got to go. So it's not really the right thing, because of the fact that you're not supposed to leave a shul until the Sefer Torah has been put back. That's technically the halacha. Now, people are lenient in this because of the fact that they say, well, there are people that are going to be involved, and other people are going to take care of it. I'm not worried that the Sefer Torah is going to be left lying around. Okay, but what about to leave the Sefer Torah and everybody walks out? And you leave the Sifrei Torah there. In other words, one thing, if I have to get to work, so okay, I know that part of the davening, they're going to put the Sifrei Torah back. It's another 2 minutes. I can't wait those 2 minutes. But I know that everyone who's there in the shul, they're going to see, there's no question, they're going to put back Sifrei Torah in 2 minutes. But here, everybody's walking out to go make Kiddush, and they leave the Sifrei Torah there. So that is not correct. That is not. There is no heter that I am aware of to do that. So there's no heter whatsoever. So what do you really need to do? So you really need to leave, at the very least, you need to leave a shomer. Somebody should stand there, just technically, to be the guard of the Sifrei Torah. Right? Not so much because your phrase can be stolen or whatever it is, but it's not appropriate. It's not nice. This is such a, the Sefer Torah, so much kedusha, just leave it there. So a lot of times, you have a situation in a shul, in yeshiva, everybody runs out to make kiddush, and the whole room is empty. That's not correct. Really, the right thing is that they should see to it that somebody is there. Now, often you have people who don't want to rely on the heter. You know, there are people who don't hold by this business of making kiddush. So therefore, they'll stay in the shul because they don't agree altogether that you should be making kiddush now. So if you have that, the problem is solved. But somebody just has to have the presence of mind to make sure that that's happening. Because if that's not happening, then it's not right. It's not right to walk out of the shul like that. Covering the Sifrei Torah with a talus doesn't help. Does not help. That's also what people think. You know, they cover the Sifrei Torah with a talus, now you can do what you want. It's not really so. It's supposed to be put back. It's supposed to be put back in the Aron. If it's out and it's, so to speak, vulnerable, somebody has to be watching it. Yeah, yes, right. It's all in the same room. What do you mean? Oh, they opened
the wall's open. The lid is right here.
Okay, maybe. I don't know. It could be questionable whether. Okay, could be. Here in Yeshiva, they take down this wall in Rosh Hashanah. Women sit here, that mechitza, women sit here, and then they take down that wall and they make kiddush in there. Well, they don't really take it down, but they open the doors.
Yeah, but the ladies stay in here.
Okay, maybe. Maybe so. There are women saying, okay, could be. It could be. But I'm just pointing it out. I'm just pointing out that this is halacha nobody thinks about. Everybody's, you know, whether you make kiddush, you don't make kiddush, that's the question, right? But there are other considerations also. And finally, the question comes up that if you go out, do you have to leave your talus on? And if you take your talus off, do you have to make another bracha when you come back? So the accepted practice is that when it comes to this, for a short hefsek, we don't require a person to make another bracha, right? The only time, let's say a person goes to the bathroom, whatever it is, the minig is that you don't make another bracha for that, if it's a short lapse of time. What exactly constitutes a short lapse of time is unclear, but if the kiddush is just going to be a few minutes, so then really, if a person didn't want to get his talus afraid, get his talus dirty, you know, you go in to make kiddush and somebody, it's not just you, you're somebody else, the person can come holding a cup of coffee and oh, he trips, it bumps into somebody and then you get a big coffee stain on your talus. So if a person wants to take the talus off in that situation, So long as the break was just for, let's say, 10, 15 minutes, then he wouldn't have to make another bracha when he puts it back on. But if it's going to be a lengthy break, or certainly if a person's going to go home, right, let's say live near the shul, I'll go home, I'll make it in my house, and I'll come back, which apparently used to be the custom in some places, that's with mashma and the svarim like that, that people would actually go home. So then that's a person should make another bracha. So anyway, so to summarize, these are some of the issues that come up with the idea, this time-honored custom of making Kiddush on Rosh Hashanah. Like I say, it's stricter on Rosh Hashanah than it is on a regular Shabbos. Okay, and even on regular Shabbos, this is a very big issue in shuls and so forth, and it's because it gets out of hand, and that's probably what the Mat Ephraim meant when he said that you shouldn't do it in public, because just the nature of Klal Yisrael is that, you know, everyone likes to do things and to enhance them and enhance them more. So a person starts off making Kiddush, and the next thing you know, you have a whole big gala Kiddush party taking place. So that's something which is obviously objectionable. But on a regular Shabbos, theoretically, it's not as big a deal because of the fact that there is no mitzvah to do. But on a day that there is a mitzvah, Rosh Hashanah, or even on Sukkot. Now, let's say after Sukkot, after Hallel, Hallel to shake the wolf, right? Let's say before Hallel, on Sukkot, they want to make Kiddush. So also, you would get into the same question, because you haven't shaken a lulav yet. You haven't shaken a lulav yet, and really, the truth of the matter is, one could say, when it comes to Sukkot, that it also applies to sitting in a sukkah. Whereas if you sleep in a sukkah, so already, when you woke up in the morning, you're already fulfilling the mitzvah of sukkah. You're in the sukkah, every second you're in the sukkah. But if you only eat in the sukkah, which is what many, many people do, so then when you come home from shul, so technically you're allowed to eat a snack outside of a sukkah, right? We have the halacha, teishful ke'en taduru, that living in a sukkah is like living in your house. So therefore, the same way a person would eat a snack outside of his house, he's allowed to eat a snack outside of a sukkah too. But it's very questionable if you could do that before you've been in the sukkah, because you have a mitzvah to sit in the sukkah also. So that's also a mitzvah that you have to do. So really, when it comes to these types of situations, a person just keep in mind that on a day that there's a mitzvah, be it Rosh Hashanah, be it Sukkot, and the other time it really comes up is on Purim, right? So there are those who say, just for the record, I'm saying now, everybody look at me like I'm crazy, but this is brought in the name of Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, that he, on Purim morning, before he ate breakfast, would give Shalach Manas, and would give Matanos Levyonim, because of the same reason. Because he said that any mitzvah that there is to do, you can't eat before you do the mitzvah. So therefore, it's not just on Purim, the reading of the Megillah. So the Suda of Purim, that's already brought down that it should be in the afternoon. But what about the mitzvah Mishloach Manos? That's right away in the morning. That's the whole day of Purim. So he held that the same rule applies to that too. So this already is unheard of. People say, what? Come on, I come home from shul on Purim, I eat breakfast, and then we set about the whole day of giving out the Shalach Manos. Okay, but it might be worthwhile if you have a next-door neighbor or something like that, that before anything starts on Purim, it just takes a minute, just go bring him Shalach Manos, it's finished. I took care of it, and now I could sit down and eat like a mensch. I don't have to worry. I did all the mitzvahs, the matanos of Yonim, I gave to whatever it's being taken care of. I gave to the fund ahead of time, and the Megillah I heard in Shalach Manos, I took care of it. But when there is a mitzvah to do, generally speaking, do you have this situation that you're not supposed to eat before you do it, and who the heter applies to and how much the heter applies really is disputed amongst the poskim, and not so simple. So this type of thing is just worthwhile to know and to keep in mind.
Well, next time.